gambling house where he rolled his dice in silence and spat with little grace upon the floor. Perceiving Ah Suk now, however, Ah Kui felt that he had been mistaken to repudiate the hatter's character so completely. The man who sat before him now seemed, what, virtuous? Principled? The words were not quite right. His speech was ardent, and there was a sweetness to this ardour, almost a naivety. Ah Kui realized, to his surprise, that he did not at all dislike him. He was flattered that Ah Suk had sought his company and his confidence that afternoon, and this pleasure disposed him to be sympathetic. What was more, he had not yet guessed the purpose of the other man's visit, and therefore was very much enthralled in his tale. He had forgotten for the moment his disapproval of the other man's trade and the sickly smell of the smoke which he had brought with him, on his clothing, in his hair. Ah Suk had paused to eat a mouthful of curd. He praised the dish a second time and then resumed his tale. On the night of the 14th of January, directly following Francis Carver's rendezvous with Crosby Wells, Godspeed weighed anchor, a fact about which Ah Suk would remain ignorant for some days. He remained in Canieri, where he was occupied with planning the logistics of his impending crime. He had a keen sense of ceremony, and he desired very much that Carver's death should happen in the proper way. However, he did not possess a pistol, and to his knowledge, nor did any one of his compatriots. He would have to purchase one, discreetly, and learn to use it on his own. He had just spent the sum total of his dust upon the opium he had purchased from Pritchard's emporium, and he had no more money at his disposal. Ought he to ask one of his fellows for a loan? He was pondering this problem when there came another unexpected tiding from Hokitika. Anna Wetherill had tried and failed to end her life. Ah Suk was very distressed by this intelligence, though he found upon reflection that he did not believe it to be true. He decided instead that Pritchard's latest shipment of opium must have been poisoned. Anna's constitution was well accustomed to the drug, and a fraction of an ounce was hardly enough to cause her to lose consciousness for many hours, such that she could not be revived. Ah Suk returned to Hokitika the following morning and requested an immediate interview with Pritchard's shipping agent, Thomas Balfour. It so happened that this morning, the 16th of January, was the very morning that Balfour discovered that the shipping crate containing Alistair Lauderback's personal effects had disappeared from the Hokitika waterfront. As a consequence of this, the shipping agent was curt and very much distracted. Yes, Balfour Shipping had Pritchard's contract. Balfour had little to do with the cargo itself, however. Perhaps Ah Suk might do better to contact Pritchard's supplier, who was a rather brutish-seeming man, thick-set, with a scarred cheek and a gruff nature. His name was Francis Carver. Was Ah Suk at all acquainted with this man? Ah Suk controlled his shock as best he could. He asked how long Carver and Pritchard had been partners in business. Balfour replied that he did not know, but since Carver had been an infrequent face in Hokitika since the spring of the previous year, he imagined that the two men had conducted their relationship for at least that long. It was strange, Balfour went on, that Ah Suk had never encountered Carver if they were known to one another, for such was very obvious from the expression on Ah Suk's face. But perhaps not that strange, seeing as Carver so seldom ventured inland, and Ah Suk so seldom ventured into town. Was Carver known to him from his years in Canton? Yes? Well, in that case, it was certainly a shame that they had missed each other. Yes, missed each other. Mr. Carver had recently set sail. 2 days ago, in fact. What a pity, for the man had most likely sailed for Canton, in which case he was not likely to return to Hokitika for some time. Ah Suk had reached the point in his narrative when the kettle began to boil. Ah Kui lifted it down from the range and poured the water over their tea to steep. Ah Suk paused, watching the tea leaves float to the bottom of his bowl and gather there. After a long moment, he resumed. Taking Balfour's supposition that Carver had left Hokitika for Canton and would not return for some months as the truth, Ah Suk again returned to Canieri to ponder his next move. He knew from the Maori man, Taufare, that Francis Carver had been seeking news of a man named Crosby Wells just prior to his departure. Perhaps he could contact this Crosby Wells himself and question him. He remembered from his brief conversation with Taufare that Wells lived in the Arahura Valley, some few miles upriver from the coast. He journeyed there and discovered, to his even greater disappointment, that the cottage was empty. The hermit was dead. In the week that followed, Ah Suk followed the story of the Wells' fortune very closely, believing, not unreasonably, that the hermit's death was in some way related to Carver's departure. This project had consumed him for nigh on 8 days, until that very morning, in fact, the 27th of January, when he had made 2 discoveries that had surprised him very much indeed. Ah Suk was just about to announce the reason for his visit when a pistol crack rent the air. He started in shock, and there came shouting from the clearing beyond Arqui's door.
"Come out of there, you rotten chink! You come out of there and stand up like a man!"
Ah Suk's eyes found Arqui's. "Who?" he asked silently, and Arqui pinched his mouth to indicate distaste. Mannering. But his eyes were fearful. In the next moment, the Hessian curtain was wrenched aside, and Mannering filled the doorway. He had his pistol in his hand.
"Sitting around the forge, are you? Scheming, are you? Both of you in it together? I'd have thought better of you, Johnny Suk, to dirty yourself in muck such as this. Yellow peril? By God!"
He strode into the cabin, rather less threateningly than he would have liked, for the stud was very low and he was obliged to stoop, and caught Arqui around his body with one strong arm. He placed the muzzle of his Smith & Wesson against the man's temple, and at once Arqui became very still.
"All right," Mannering said. "I'm listening. What's your business with Crosby Wells?"
For a moment Arqui did not move at all. Then he shook his head, minutely, for he was conscious of the muzzle's pressure against his skull. He did not know a man named Crosby Wells, beyond what Ah Suk had just narrated to him, which was simply that the man had been a hermit, had lived in the Arahura Valley, and had recently died. Behind Mannering, a white-faced Charlie Frost slipped into the room, and then, moments later, the collie dog Holly bounded in behind him. Her coat was very wet. She trotted to the perimeter of the small room, panting gloriously, and uttered several hoarse barks that nobody bothered to hush.
"Well, then," Mannering said, when Arqui did not respond, "I'll ask it the other way around, shall I? Tell me this, Johnny Qui, what was Crosby Wells doing with £4,000 of Aurora gold?"